9-to-5 jobs may feel like a thing of the past, but that office life may be coming back sooner than we think. Over the past year, we asked people to make endless changes to their work environment, and the truth is, they didn't really have a choice. Many organizations are stuck between two conventional approaches: bring everybody back to the office, or continue and optimize virtual work. The common thread between the two? Not exactly the employee's call. And that's where we could be mistaken. There are millions of people that have tasted remote work and won't easily let it go. And further, they're expecting it at this point. And alternatively, there are others that would prefer to return to the office. So we find ourselves on the precipice of yet another very important decision for many organizations. How much autonomy should we give our people about their work environments? And we probably don't have a choice but to face it head on. I'm Gabriel Berezin, and this is Your Brain at Work from the NeuroLeadership Institute. We continue to draw episodes from a weekly webinar series that NLI has been hosting every Friday. This week, our panel consists of Rob Olander Crane, Senior Client Strategist at NLI, and Dr. Camila Sipp, Senior Director of Neuroscience Research at NLI. Enjoy.
Let's dive in. So,
excellent.
You know, the traditional paradigm of 9-to-5 work that we have all known, and certainly was the norm before 2020, was absolutely shattered by the COVID pandemic. And as the pandemic starts to get under control, it's time for us to evaluate what we're all going to do going forward. Should we be going back to the office? Should we be staying remote? We have a point of view that we should actually be doing something that's a bit of both, something we're calling a hybrid work environment. So let's dive in. We want to talk about this new working paradigm, but let's start by talking about our current reality, like what's really happening in the world today before we talk about what could happen in the world tomorrow. So the pandemic forced us to shut all of our offices down. We all know that. This is not new news to anybody. Overnight, employees had to work remotely. There was no choice. We just had to do that. And, you know, I remember when that first happened thinking, oh my God, are we actually going to be able to get our work done? We've never done this before. We've never been entirely remote. But what was amazing was that in 2020, we actually figured it out. Employees figured it out, managers figured it out, companies figured it out, and our processes became sort of unfrozen, right? We challenged all of these assumptions that we had about how we got work done, and all those people who said, oh, you have to be in the office to get work done, all of a sudden, we're figuring out ways to get the work done remotely. This requirement to be remote made us really innovative. Necessity is the mother of all invention. And somehow we were able to solve lots of problems, lots of new ways of working, even though we were remote. We became technology experts. And I think maybe when I crashed, I was about to say, I wasn't a Zoom expert a year ago, but all of a sudden I'm kind of a Zoom expert. Companies became more flexible. And one really interesting flexibility was that they could hire from anywhere. You didn't have to hire near your office. So your talent pool became much bigger and you didn't have to pay relocation fees. And then finally, for some employees, I wouldn't say all of them, some felt more work-life balance by able to work at home, take care of kids, take care of parents, take care of stuff around the house, became much more balanced. So the question is, okay, well, what do we do next?
When it comes to decision time of whether stay remote or go back to offices, there's quite a lot of splits. Some really is more technology oriented organizations think of going back to or staying remotely mostly to much higher extent. But we also have heard from across the globe, from Europe, from APAC, from North America, that there is this need right now for everyone to return to the office. There's still that both comes from employers, but also employees. I think it might be grounded in the fact that after 2020 and such a saturation of us being at home, we actually want to go back to the office to get some of the balance back to some extent. And what we know that we shouldn't actually fall for that trap in some ways. And we know from research that based on everything that happened last year, we should be thinking of designing a work environment to address the need for autonomy. The newly discovered autonomy, and after the first 2 months, probably when we kind of come down from the shock to our system of going back overnight to working remotely, the autonomy, the flexibility that we could actually start exercising has been quite profound. And it would be a mistake to give it up or put it to the side right now going forward in 2021 and beyond. And when organizations decide to go and try to accommodate that more into this hybrid work environment, as Rob was mentioning, we need to kind of also try to pull back from the need from us or from the natural approach that we would have, that we would focus on making the remote work very well and very effective, because that's going to create quite imbalance across the entire workforce in your organization if you just spend the time on amping up the capacity of working remotely and not necessarily pay attention to the on-site or the corrections that need to be adjusted in that domain as well. And that's where we actually say, when we advise the research-based approach being to optimize both on-site and remote environments so they can complement each other. So they are creating a cohesive one workforce or one organization rather than the two things that go side by side. And this is exactly what we are trying to actually advocate for, is not to think about hybrid as this gluing 1 + 1 = 2, because it's really not the case. And instead of thinking of those gluing and combining the two worlds, we actually think that focusing on how to work effectively across the different domains is going to be much more productive for you and your organizations, rather than concentrating on where to work and location and trying to pull the two levers of remote and on-site at the same time, which might be quite challenging for many organizations. As Rob was mentioning, when we were preparing this point of view of NLI, we've actually toyed quite a lot with a lot of different advice, and we actually landed at the three main ideas or three main factors that organizations need to take into account to make it work and to push forward with creating and designing optimal hybrid working environment. And the three components are clarity, autonomy, and equity. And we'll go one by one with Rob as we go through it to tell you a little bit more, both from the science and also the practical application of what does that mean for us? What do you mean clarity and principles? And I think that would be something that it's a very simple three-step approach that you can implement and think about overlaying over the plans that you are going to be having going forward. So without further ado, let's talk about what we mean by clarity and creating the principles rather than rules, rather than creating more constraints and obstacles. It's more about understanding the higher level principles and allowing for the autonomy that we'll be discussing later. The first thing that we need to think about when it comes to clarity and moving beyond 2021 is that understanding that 2020 was not just a remote work. It actually was a remote life. Overnight, we all went from offices to kitchen counters and the dark corners of our bedrooms and cats walking by during our Zoom calls. So there was quite a lot of adjustment that we all had to do. And we really didn't have a choice. There was a force-fit paradigm that was imposed on us. And even in that paradigm, we actually could realize that the necessity that was there actually made us more inventive, as Rob mentioned, and we could still find satisfaction. So after the first triage, the first 2 months of adjusting and trying to figure out our way and trying to figure out the routine, we actually see that a lot of employees, a lot of the workforce reported quite a lot of satisfaction with working from home with the same or higher productivity, which is the opposite from what the worries were initially with dropping productivity in such a shift and sudden shift. But also taking care of your health or things that you wouldn't be paying attention to, or you wouldn't think that you have the time in the day when you are commuting. As somebody mentioned here that they don't miss commuting, I think the time for commute can be a time for a run or a short gym session or even a walk, that actually we started to exercising much more. And this actually confirmed the quite a lot of research that we've had from industry from way before 2020, that the more flexibility we give to our workforce, it actually has a measurable correlation in terms of the greater productivity, engagement, discretionary effort, how much more work we actually are doing at home or in our virtual environments compared to what was expected of us. The one thing that, before I hand it over to Rob to explain what we mean by clarity, is that we need to remember that we shouldn't think of this one size fits all and going back and transplanting the experience of 2020 and expectations to 21 and beyond. Because as you can see here, not only from your polls and the surveys, that there has been quite a lot of variability in terms of who wants to work from home and who doesn't. It's actually reflected in this survey from Stanford with 2,500 working professionals, that you can see that the spread is quite a lot. Nearly 40% says that they never or rarely want to work from home. in the post-COVID environment, there is the opposite side of about another 40% of 45% of those who seem to be wanting to work from home most of the time, 5-4 days. And then there is the midline, which is the 2-3-1 days from home, working from home, which actually speaks to exactly what Rob is going to be outlining for us, like how to handle that, how to handle this diversity in terms of the need that we are expressing across the board.
Cami, before you move forward, how many companies are giving employees a choice on what they want versus telling them what to do? And I know from the work we've done together and what I've seen is that it's kind of all over the board. I look at one study and it says everybody has to come back to the office. I look at another study and it says, you know, companies are giving people the flexibility. I don't think we know yet. But Cami, is there anything you would add on to that?
I agree. I don't think we have a specific number, like 50-50% split between companies, because there is quite of a variety when it comes to the type of organizations. Different organizations, different sectors give different level of flexibility depending on what is that they are actually producing, whether that's within the healthcare, within pharma, within technology. So there is a spread across sectors, but not necessarily across the board. And yes, the data is still coming in, so we don't necessarily have a specific number, I would say. Yes.
Good. Deborah, you know, what I would say is, I don't think we can look to trend to decide what to do at this point. And what we're trying to explain are some principles that you can use to make the decision for your own company and to be successful regardless of which path you take. So Cami was passing the torch to me to talk about creating clarity through principles. One successful way of driving this hybrid work environment is to be really clear on sort of what are the operating guidelines, what are the barriers or the walls that you set up that people have to live within. This can help employees and teams know how to navigate this sort of this new thing, this new paradigm, this new level of ambiguity. Some examples of possible principles are things like we want to maximize innovation and creativity. That's our goal in figuring out where people should be working. We want to maximize innovation and creativity. And that principle could lead you to make a whole bunch of different decisions around hybrid. Another one could be we want to drive more autonomy. We really believe that our employees are adults. They can make the right decisions about how and where to work. We want to increase their level of autonomy. That's what we want to design in our hybrid work environment. Or, and I think this is probably important for anybody who's doing this, we want to create some kind of parity. So no matter where you work, whether you decide to come back to the office, whether you decide to work in some remote fashion, or whether you decide to do a combination of the two, no matter where you are, you feel you have equal access to opportunity and to resources. But probably the most important principle, and one that we strongly recommend companies do, is to start by identifying the work that must be done in the office. Right, to actually think, what does need to happen in a physical plant, perhaps with other people around you or with specific tools that you need that can't be done anywhere else? And once you identify that subset of the work that needs to be done, then tell employees, you've got the autonomy to choose your path to get the rest of the work done. But you have to start by understanding really what needs to be done in the office. So that's the starting place. Now, there's a couple ways you can do that. You can do it by project or goal. So get very specific about a project or goal. You can get even more specific and say it's by task, or a little bit more generic and say, you know, it's really more by function or by role type. And think, when I worked at The Gap for many, many years, we would want to bring all of our product development teams together because there's some magic that happens when the team is touching the product, when they're looking at the color palette, when they're feeling the density of the weave, right? When they see how the garment drapes on the model and they can touch it and tweak it to make it better. So those functions probably need to spend more time in the office. Whereas I was in HR, I could do my entire job remotely. So thinking about what work must be done either by project goal, task, function, or role type, I think is a good way to think about this. There are other ways to do it, and your company might not be ready to take that big leap and just identify a small subset of things that need to be done in the office and give everybody else permission to do what they want. You might want to give maybe some more generic guidance, and that's fine. You might be a little bit concerned about the level of autonomy you're giving. You might want to be a little bit more directive. So this is another way to do it. You can say either by day, this group of people needs to be in the office and these other days they can be at home, or by week, this group of individuals, this team needs to be in the office, these days they can be at home. So you can be a little bit more generic and how you do it. This is simpler. It takes less work. It's easier to execute, but it does have some negative ramifications on employee engagement, meaning you're taking away some of the newfound autonomy. You know, how you got to keep them down on the farm after they see Barry. You're taking away some of that newfound autonomy by sort of dictating when they need to be in the office as opposed to letting the work dictate that. Still, it's an option. For your organizations that are considering this sort of hybrid model where you can work sometimes in the office and where you can work sometimes at home, how are you doing that? Do your employees have complete control over their schedule? Is it within team guidelines, bigger organizational guidelines, or you're not letting people choose at all, or you haven't made a decision yet? We want to take a deep dive into this concept of autonomy, the flexibility to work where you want to work, the power to do that, right? Let's explore this a little bit. Now, the struggle for working in the office and working at home and the flexibility idea, this is not a new struggle. I've been in HR for most of my career, and I can think back 10, 20 years, we're having this conversation about, do we allow people the flexibility to work where they want, when they want, how they want, long before COVID. It's a struggle for companies. Can we trust employees to work where they want, when they want, as long as they hit their objectives? That's holding employees accountable to meeting their goals, but giving them the autonomy to choose where they want to work. And HR leaders put up all sorts of obstacles to this. Business leaders put up all sorts of obstacles. I've lived it in real time in the companies that I've worked in. They say things like, this gives the employee too much freedom. We have to focus exclusively on driving the business, maybe because business is soft right now. So we don't have the luxury of changing our paradigm. It's not the right time to make this change. I'm sure you have, if you've been in a company, heard leaders say things like this, it's not the right time to become more flexible. But there are companies who've done it long before COVID who have been successful. And I think of one in particular in 2007, I believe it was, Best Buy, electronics company in the US, they created this thing called RO, Results Only Work Environment. It was like nirvana for those of us who want to move toward a flexible work environment. What it said was, all you need to do is hit your goals. The rest is up to you. And I remember one of their slogans was, every day is a Saturday. You choose how and where and when you're going to work as long as you achieve your goal. So it is possible to have this kind of environment happen. It was happening long before COVID. I think we need to leverage some of those successes as we're thinking about what we're doing. So I want to stop for a second and let you reflect on what might be preventing your company, what has prevented or could prevent your company from embracing a flexible work program or like this hybrid idea that we're talking about.
And I think that the first thing that we need to tackle is the way we think about autonomy and flexibility that comes very natural to us and instinctively based on also the learned environment and the years and years of being in a specific culture, both in terms of the nation that you are in, but also the organizational culture. And the first thing that often comes to mind when we think give your employees more autonomy, we actually have the knee-jerk reaction to think, but wait, so I'm going to give them the autonomy to decide whether to work. And suddenly, like, they will not be doing and fulfilling on their projects and tasks and deliverables. But there is a mind shift that needs to happen and kind of almost mitigating that immediate pushback on autonomy and reshifting that to thinking about it's not about whether to work. It's more about how to work effectively, which goes back to what Rob was mentioning earlier, that it's not necessarily about the autonomy. It's not a control over somebody's doing or not doing the work. It's much more about giving them autonomy and keeping them accountable for the deliverable, for the product, for anything that they need to accomplish in that specific time frame or within the role. And there is also another component that is really profoundly, especially right now, heightened for a lot of managers, that we think that there is a lot of threat of letting go that we all experience as human beings. But when it comes to autonomy and letting go of the control, especially in a virtual environment, there is a natural imbalance that is coming up for us, meaning that the more autonomy we feel, that the more autonomy we give to our employees, so we increase their autonomy, that somehow that comes as an experience of perceived loss of control as a manager can have over the team, over the product, over the deliverable, loss of ownership, and some level of certainty is also getting taxed to some extent, because again, it comes down to this level of feeling that there is a control rather than coming from the perspective of accountability.
One of the recurring themes was CEO wants control.
That's an interesting part, because that's exactly what I'm going to talk about it in here. So those are the immediate challenges, but the reasons for why we struggle with flexible work, why we struggle with flexible work arrangements and giving our workforce more autonomy is actually threefold to some extent. There probably are more, but we think that those are the three that are the main drivers or the main roadblocks for us. One is the biases that we have, meaning the cognitive biases that are going to kick in, but also the implicit biases and the way we learn to operate in specific cultures. Because we know from a lot of NLI research and everything that we've been discussing about cognitive biases that they do shape our perception unconsciously. Before we even process the information fully, we already get into the pattern of thinking based on our past experiences and what worked, what is the easiest, what is the default way for us to work. The other one is actually the power dynamics, as Rob, as you mentioned, and somebody mentioned that in the CEO, and the importance of understanding that the higher we go in hierarchy and we gain more power, there are measurable cognitive effects of power that shape how we perceive everything around us, including decision-making, including the perception of how we perceive goals versus details, workforce, meaning people versus actually task and deliverables. And all of those things inform our vantage point. So in here, we actually specifically chose the graphic to show the difference between when you look up from the bottom of the mountain up to the mountain, in terms of when you think in reflecting that as a hierarchy, you have a very different point of view and you see different obstacles and different lens and different landscape than those who are looking from the top down, meaning that the same piece of information can be perceived very, very differently, and it's going to impact and hinder some of the decision-making and some of the processes. And the last one, I call it the autonomy's tug of war, because it's not just that one size doesn't fit all, but also that we internally as human beings, we want both autonomy to have a control and have a sense of control over our environment, both as a manager, but also as an employee, that's across the board. But also we want some level of structure, meaning that just like there is no innovation happening, there is no boundary. So we need some boundaries to be broken for the innovation to happen. We also like to have some structure and certainty and predictability about what is the scope within which I can exercise my autonomy, which goes back to the idea of principle rather than the rules, so to have some guidelines for us. So there's quite a few different components why we struggle with this: biases, power dynamics, and the autonomy tug of war that we have on a cognitive and emotional level. And regardless of all this, what we need to do right now is realize that flexible work arrangements are no longer a perk. They are right now an expectation. We've tasted the sweet taste of autonomy in 2020, despite the fact that it was challenging at the beginning, but it opened up a window for us as human beings and employees and workforce to see that there is a different way of working, that we realize that the jobs that we thought we can't just do remote, we actually can. And some level of flexibility is actually quite beneficial, and we can find a way to do that. And for progressive leaders, it's one of the things to consider that because it's no longer a perk, it's now an expectation, it's a advantage, is a something that is a differentiating factor for organizations and workforce. We want to make sure that we rethink and reframe the perception of autonomy that we have as more of a powerful lever for engagements for our employees, rather than thinking of autonomy as the zero sum. Am I giving you the freedom to do whatever you want and you don't show up to work? Oh, I'm controlling you on the very end of the spectrum in doing everything and exactly the way I want it, with all the emails and interjecting in conversations. So there is definitely five different ways we can think about autonomy and five different domains to pull that lever to enable our workforce to be more engaged in the organization.
Have you ever wanted one of those cool members-only jackets? Well, we don't sell those, but we do sell corporate memberships. What you'd get instead of a jacket is a collection of resources to help your organization get results faster, develop truly fresh insights, stay ahead of the curve, and build your network. NLI's corporate membership is a premium offer that gives you insider access to decades of thought leadership and peer-reviewed research, hundreds of hours of on-demand content, case studies from leading global organizations, jackets sold separately. To learn more, visit membership.neuroleadership.com.
Before you go to the scarf model, we really struggled about whether we just wanted to talk about what we typically talk about when you're talking about flexible work environments, which is people who exclusively work in offices, as opposed to people who are in jobs that don't have a choice. So when I was at The Gap, all of our salespeople and all of our distribution centers employees had no choice. They had to physically be in those locations. And we were trying to figure out, well, do we want to talk about it? Do we not talk about that? And we ultimately decided not to. But one thing that I will say about people who don't have a choice, who have to be physically in a plant in order to do their jobs, is you want to give them some kind of flexibility. And for us in stores, it was giving sales associates as much autonomy in choosing when they worked. I mean, they had to be in the store. They had to work a certain number of hours. That's the way our work process was structured. But when they were physically there, we wanted to try to give them as much autonomy to choose their actual schedule, give them a methodology for swapping hours out with other people so that they felt a little bit of control in their world where we could give it to them. But we ultimately decided that this conversation was really only going to be about people who are working in office spaces. And it is a challenge for there to be parity. And I'll spend a little bit more time on that answer in just a minute. Cami, what would you add to that?
That's one thing we'll be discussing. And there is also a level of reframing for us when we think about, instead of thinking that, you know, those who work on site, that they don't have a choice. I think that we need to also rethink that they don't have a choice whether to be offsite or onsite. But from an organizational standpoint and equity standpoint, we need to think about what are the other things that we can level the playing field, as Rob, you'll be discussing later, to help offset some of the imbalance, because it's not about creating everything in exactly the same axis, because the different types of work and the different roles will have different consequences and implications. But thinking about it from our human needs, when it comes to actually going through and thinking from an equity perspective, is thinking back to the core psychological needs that we have that are not bound by the location, but that are not bound by where you are and whether you have to be on site or not, and actually designing principles and guidelines and all the structures to accommodate and inform and send the positive signals across the five domains of SCARF. That SCARF, for those of you who don't know, it's the five psychological domains of needs that we all have as human beings. And if they are not addressed, they are creating quite a lot of threat response that we may have, stress and confusion and sometimes disengagement if they are not met repeatedly. So I think that that would be an important component to think about, making it equitable based on psychological needs. For development, for growth, for stretch goals, those should not be not available to those who work on site. They should be equally available. They will be different type, but they should be equally available when it comes to actually translating that principle to the hybrid world rather than the one versus another.
If given too much choice about where to work, does that make the workplace more homogeneous? For example, will more women decide to stay at home to take care of children, meaning more men will be in the office and less women will be in the office? What are your thoughts about that?
So I think that there is a cost and benefit to that. We need to think that in those terms, because right now what we know from a lot of research is that the shift from working from home essentially means quite of a setback for women in professional domains, because they are actually taking care of doing multiple jobs at the same time. So we want to make sure that we don't overcorrect and actually take care of those, like the setbacks that are inevitable with the change in context, to make sure that we troubleshoot this setback and kind of offset with more equitable approach. And the other thing is that when we think about creating more flexibility of where to work, and also making sure that we are allowing for more equitable access to resources in organizations on site, is that we want to make sure that we don't deepen the diversity and inclusion and access to resources between different groups, different minorities. When you think about those who need to be on site or those who work on site versus those who work from remote in HR offices, we want to level the playing field across the board. So actually not to create this inadvertently deeper setbacks across both women and minorities when it comes to allowing for autonomy for some groups and not the others. Does that answer the question? And Rob, do you have anything to add to that?
I think you hit the nail right on the head. I certainly don't want to create an environment that doesn't feel equal, but I'm so much an advocate of treating people like adults within some guardrails, right? I think too often companies have this mentality that if they don't use a sort of command and control approach where you're seen, that you're not doing your job and that you're not effective. And we know from all the research, old and new, that people are not motivated by being micromanaged. That's just not how people operate. And from a brain perspective, it's even worse. The brain shuts down when you have an autonomy threat. So I would rather err toward the side of giving a little bit more autonomy within some guidelines and figure out how to tweak for the negative ramifications that might come up than to be really conservative and not give people the chance to actually work the way they feel they want to and need to. Our last chapter speaks to sort of this idea of a level playing field, because if you really are going to do hybrid and do it well, as Kemi mentioned earlier, it's not 1 + 1 = 2. You really need to maximize and build a structure that works for everyone, no matter where they are. It can't be that the people who work in the office have an advantage over people who work remotely or an advantage over people who do both. You have to level the playing field. So Kemi already started to allude to this. You need to give everybody the same access to resources. And by resources, I mean like everything. Access to time off, access to professional development, stretch assignments, right? Regardless of where you work, you should be able to be eligible for a stretch assignment or a highly visible project opportunity, right? Everybody, regardless of whether they're sitting next to you in the office or 1,000 miles away, should have that same access to resources. And I'll throw in technology as well. You know, often it's easier to work in the office because the technology is better there. And when you're remote, you're dealing with all sorts of dial-up issues years and years ago, or VPN issues now, or Zoom issues. Companies need to make it easy for employees to work no matter where they are. So access to resources. The second is going back to our first chapter, principles that are clear, and you'll need to decide for your organization what those principles are. Are you driving autonomy? Are you driving equity, parity, whatever those principles are, but that they're consistently managed. So no matter, again, where you sit in the organization, you're applying those principles the same way. And the third is that everything becomes hybrid. And just reading that, you're probably going, what the heck does that mean? I'm going to give you one example that I think will illustrate what we mean by that. I remember before COVID, when I was working remotely, and I was in a decision-making meeting with my peers, and they were all in the office. They were in a conference room, and I was that one remote person on the TV in the corner of the room that nobody paid attention to. They forgot about me. Really hard for me to get my voice heard. Maybe once in a while, there was a good facilitator of the meeting who said, oh, Rob, what are you thinking? But it was usually at the very end of the meeting. If you really want to do hybrid well, in those kinds of meetings where decisions are being made, where everybody's voice is important, where there needs to be parity, everyone needs to be on their own laptop, regardless of whether they're in the office, in a conference room, or they are remote. That starts to make hybrid equitable across the entire organization. There's probably hundreds of examples we could come up with, but you have to do that because otherwise there will always be a deficit for working remotely. And if you really, truly want to drive a hybrid work environment, you need to do those kinds of things and make those things equal. So the next thing is about leaders. And I pointed out that in the chat, CEOs were one obstacle toward rolling out flexible work arrangements. I think leaders in general are more traditional, not all of them, but in my experience, where I usually need to influence in my organization is leadership. And often there are more on the traditional side, and I have to, in a sense, sell them on the idea of something that's different, show them new research, influence them. Getting leaders to reinforce this new working paradigm is critical to the success. And leaders are a strong source of normative social influence. And what I mean by that is, you know, people look to them. They watch what they do. They listen to what they say. They look at the decisions that they make. And when leaders adopt these new habits, the habits can become contagious within an organization. So getting leaders on board, aligned, communicating the right story, and modeling behavior is absolutely critical. Hybrid work environments will not succeed if the leaders are not wrapped around it and being the role models of that. But again, there's a unique challenge here. And that unique challenge is that most leaders are traditional. I won't say they all use a command and control model, but many do. And you've got to get them to move away from that in order to make something like this effective, or else it's not going to work. It's going to backfire. So get them involved in the principle-making part of your work, right? Let them help decide what those things are, because that will give them the buy-in to make this work. I don't think we can have a conversation about working remotely or this hybrid world without talking about culture. I'm sure somewhere in this presentation already, you've heard the word culture, but some believe that you can't keep a culture alive by working remotely, or at least it's harder, if not impossible, to maintain a company's culture. That culture is what's inside the walls of the organization that you're working in. And 2020 shattered that myth. The company I'm working in right now, the culture feels exactly the same as it did before COVID. And I would bet for most of you, you could probably make the same statement. Culture is not about where you work. It's about how you work. Culture is the shared everyday habits that show up in the organization, the things that are said. And it's about how we work with each other, how we interact with each other. So it is possible to keep the culture of your organization alive, even if you use a hybrid model, because it's not about where you work. Our CEO, David Rock, recently published an article in Forbes about this. If you need to convince your leaders that culture can continue on in its current state, even in a hybrid world, this article might be helpful for you in doing that. Cami, what would you like to add?
You are right on the money when we think about culture. In many ways, the simplest way for me to think about culture is that culture is about behavior. It's not about location, because the way we behave, the way we talk to people, the way we execute on processes, the way we engage in conversations, in decision-making, that's where culture comes in the most. And that goes back to how people behave, not necessarily whether they sit in the same office. So I think that for me, it's the simplest. It's behavior. It's not location, that when we think about culture. And with that, we can actually make culture work across many different modes. We are going to miss some of the social behavior, right? Like, we do like hanging out with people, and we miss a lot of cues when we are not seeing each other physically. But there is still a way to actually sustain culture and open up the culture across the board without actually creating more of the pocket and cliques that are technically showing up for us as human beings when we are in offices. Some people go out for drinks, others don't. But when everything is hybrid, or when we are spread out, we actually evening out quite a lot when it comes to creating that behavior and following what others are doing and how they're acting. When we want to create more networking and relationship building, that activities should be done within work hours. Because I think that the moment we think of, oh, you can network after work hours, especially when we have hybrid, and especially if we introduce the new decision about when to work, what that creates is sometimes that, you know, that we would expect people to do it after work hours, which is no longer a culture. It's more of a social engagement. And I think that that would be one of the things to think about, doing the things within agreed work hours, not necessarily 9 to 5, but within the time when everybody's available to do that. And a lot of relationship building and networking within the organization is actually happening through meetings. Sometimes it's a one-on-one, sometimes it's a group, sometimes it's a meeting and talking not about work, talking about something very different that actually enables to build some of the similarity with everybody and create the in-group that we actually learn about the other person from a perspective of not what they are doing, but who they are, what do they like, what is that we have in common that is different from us being on the same project. So it's depending on what we want, what we are aiming for, whether it's relatedness, meaning this belonging, then we should go for more of the things that are not work-oriented, but more about our humanity-oriented, like who you are as a person, and do we have anything else to discuss? And I'm sure we do. So let's do that. Let's explore those options.
You know, it's really interesting. Maybe I'm unusual here, but I felt that I built really incredible relationships in the last year, and they were all virtual. The intimacy of Zoom, I'm using that word deliberately. I feel like when I talk to someone on Zoom, especially one-on-one, that I can't be like disappearing and going somewhere else. Like, they're looking right at me. I'm looking right at them. I have built really strong relationships, and I currently work for the Neuroleadership Institute. I only started working there in August. So I had to build all those relationships exclusively in a remote environment. And I think Zoom helped me do that, because I met with people, I reached out to people, we have a chat function. I've built really strong relationships, and I've yet, in some cases, I have never met some of these people in person. So I don't see it as a difference. I think you just have to realize it's not the same as being in an office. It isn't that drive-by, that casual thing that happens by the water cooler, but you can build really strong, effective relationships even electronically.
Your Brain at Work is produced by the Neuroleadership Institute. You can help us in making organizations more human by rating, reviewing, and subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. Our producers are Cliff David, Matt Holodak, and Danielle Kirschenblatt. Our executive producer is me, Gabriel Berezin. Original music is by Grant Zubritsky, and logo design is by Ketch Ware. We'll see you next time.